The officers settled on an awkward triumvirate to command the fleet. The purser, Martin Mendez, became the fifth captain general, and Gonzalo Gomez de Espinosa took over the captaincy of Trinidad, still the flagship. Elcano gnashed his teeth in frustration, having been bypassed yet again in favor of men with lesser skills but greater rank. No one could forget that he, Elcano, had participated in the mutiny against Magellan and served his time in chains. Since then, he had rehabilitated himself, but some stain of dishonor clung to him. Still, he could console himself with becoming the captain of Victoria. Because neither Espinosa nor Mendez had first-hand navigation experience, Juan Sebastian Elcano, the veteran Basque mariner, became the unofficial head of the expedition. After 35 days in Brunei, the fleet was ready to make the final assault on the Moluccas. They had reason to believe they were approaching the Spice Islands at last. They were now following the path of an earlier European traveler, Ludovico di Vartema of Bologna, who had published a popular account of his travels, including his visit to the Spice Islands in 1510. He had reached the Spice Islands by traveling east along the overland route. Distracted and overextended, the surviving men of the fleet lacked Vartema's cunning and ability. From the moment the fleet weighed anchor, the ships ran into serious navigational trouble. Sailing downwind out of the harbor of Brunei, Trinidad ran aground as she attempted to round a point. The shoal could have sliced the hull open. The accident was caused solely by the pilot's negligence, according to Pigafetta. But by the help of God, we freed it, he said. Actually, they had to wait for 4 hours, praying that the hull would remain intact until the tide rose and freed the ship. Damaged by running aground, Trinidad's hull needed repair. In fact, both ships leaked rapidly, and the constant seepage meant that the men had to take exhausting turns at the pumps just to keep them afloat. It became apparent to all that they would have to recondition the fleet for the first time since the painstaking overhaul conducted during the grim winter in Port St. Julian. Arriving on the island of Simbanban, the Armada spent the next 42 days on repairs. Pigafetta describes their refuge as a perfect port for repairing ships, for it was remote from waterborne traffic and tranquil. But the work itself was difficult to perform efficiently, he said, as we lacked many things for repairing the ships. The difficult and exhausting task, made even more taxing by the Indonesian heat, was absolutely necessary if the ships were to be seaworthy. Once the arduous renovations were completed, the fleet resumed its search for the Spice Islands on September 27th. Traveling southeast, they came upon a weird outcropping in the ocean. It seemed to Pigafetta that the sea was full of grass, although the depth was very great. Passing the outcropping, he thought they were, in his words, entering another sea. Actually, they were still in the vicinity of Mindanao, traveling along its western coast until they arrived at another island Pigafetta calls Manoripa. The people of that island make their dwellings in boats and do not live otherwise, he observed, of the Bajau, the sea gypsies who were widely scattered throughout the area, adjusting their moorings to avoid the monsoon. Of all the tribes the Armada encountered, the Bajau were among the most enigmatic. They are thought to have flourished well before the Armada's arrival, when the Chinese were exploring the region. The Bajau developed a brisk trade in a Chinese delicacy, tripang, or sea cucumber. This leathery echinoderm, normally a few inches in length, grew to extraordinary dimensions in the area, occasionally as long as 3 feet. It was considered an aphrodisiac, the ginseng of the sea. Long after the Chinese presence faded, the Bajau remained. Each anchorage usually served an extended family that spread across several boats, as little as 2 or as many as 6. They fished together, shared food, and maintained relationships with other families through intermarriage. The boats were only 30 feet from stem to stern, and 6 feet amidships, but far more spacious than proas or balangay. Their living areas were sheltered by poles supporting mats of palm fronds, and each boat had its clay hearth for cooking. Bajau fishermen employed handheld lines and spears to catch hundreds of other edible species in addition to trepang. On moonless nights, they fished by lantern. They preserved their catch much as Europeans did, by salting and drying. Their activities were confined almost exclusively to the sea. They owned no land, but they held small islands in common devoted to burials. And when necessary, they went ashore for fresh water. They were not at all predatory. When attacked, the Bajau usually fled across the water. The crew was tempted to remain among the Bajau because the men heard that on two nearby islands they could find the best cinnamon grown anywhere. Next to cloves, cinnamon was the most valuable spice. The temptation to fill their ships with the fragrant spice proved almost irresistible. Said Pigafetta, "Had we stayed there 2 days, those people would have laden our ships for us. But as we had a wind favorable for passing points and certain islets which were near the island, we did not wish to delay." Just before they left, the men conducted a quick, probably illicit transaction, exchanging 2 large knives for about 17 pounds of cinnamon, worth enough on the docks of Seville to buy an entire ship. They expected to obtain far more cinnamon, along with nutmeg, pepper, mace, and many other precious spices, once they reached their goal. Just when it seemed that a measure of order had returned to the fleet, they attacked a large proa to obtain information about the whereabouts of the Moluccas. In a bitter struggle, they slaughtered 7 of the 18 men on board the little craft. Pigafetta mentioned the matter only in passing, and without remorse. His lack of fellow feeling reflected the entire crew's frame of mind. It is one of the outstanding ironies of the voyage that the closer they came to fulfilling their mission, the more they lost their sense of mission, which Magellan, for all his faults, had done so much to impart. Before leaving the unlucky proa in their wake, the Armada spared the life of one of its occupants, the brother of Mindanao's ruler, who insisted that he knew the way to the Moluccas. Making good on his promise, he guided the Armada on a different course. They had been traveling northeast, but he took them to the southeast, toward the Moluccas. They were only 200 miles from the Spice Islands, yet they spent weeks zigzagging blindly through the Sulawesi and Maluku Seas without knowing how to reach their destination. At the island of Cavite, the crew members struck again, capturing 2 more pilots and ordering them to take the fleet to the Moluccas on pain of death. "Laying our course south-southwest," Pigafetta says, "we passed among 8 inhabited and uninhabited islands, which were situated in the manner of a street." Even now, as they approached their goals, they were bedeviled by misfortune. On November 2nd, Pedro Sanchez, a gunner aboard Trinidad, attempted to fire an arquebus. The weapon exploded, killing him. 2 days after that, another Trinidad gunner, Juan Bautista, died in a gunpowder explosion. Unable to sail close enough to the wind to pass a cape, the fleet had to double back and forth past the point until the wind changed. As they did, 3 of their captives, 2 men and a boy, jumped ship and swam for their lives toward a nearby island. Pigafetta said, "But the boy drowned, for he was unable to hold tightly to his father's shoulder." On the ship sailed. And then, on November 6, 1521, they saw 4 islands shimmering on the horizon. Pigafetta recorded, "The pilot who still remained with us told us that those 4 islands were the Moluccas." After losing 3 ships and more than 100 men, half the crew, they were finally on the doorstep of the Spice Islands. Ternate, Tidore, Motir, Makian. They stretched from north to south, 4 small islands, each no more than 6 miles across. To the south lay a 5th Spice Island, Bacan, which was considerably larger. Volcanic ash enriched the soil on islands where the spices grew, and the moist climate also promoted lush growth. This combination made them unique sources for spices.